Okay, when in doubt, go with the people's favorite guest and fake trades. That is exactly what we have here today. It is Tuesday, April 2nd. We could not do any episode on April Fool's Day, of course. I just stick to Twitter, which is now becoming a habit where I revisit probably the best thing I've ever written. It goes for tweets, it goes for stories, it goes for reporting. And fooled a lot of people on the internet that day saying the Patriots trade Tom Brady 2 months after they won the Super Bowl for the number one overall pick. Anyway, Doug Tye from the Boston Herald is here.
You know what? In retrospect, that might have been a smart move.
Yeah.
They lost
him
anyway.
I don't want to get into that because people are still falling for the joke 5 years later. If you have not seen the tweet, that was a suggestion, Tom Brady, and I think a second or a third for Josh Rosen and the number one pick. It was not serious. The link was the big picture saying, hey, happy April Fool's Day. And a lot of serious criticism of the mentions. Anyway, we're still 3 weeks away from the draft. This is, as I said on TV last night, silly season. And there's a lot of stuff that starts to float around and we treat it as new and actual reporting when it's really a little bit more rumor than we hear in the media are starved. So we will jump in anything and feed on it and spit it back out to you and let you decide what to do with it. But here today, we're going to tell you on the front end, these are fake trades, but we think enough of them to pitch you, as well as Doug Kide, you had your recent mock draft. This was number three, right, on the site?
Three or four, yeah. I'm losing track. That's never good.
Yeah. Well, again, 'tis the season, right? It's like, true. We don't know right from left, up from down.
I love a mock.
But here's the deal. I like this mock draft. I haven't told you this more than any of the other ones that you had done. And there's a trade in there, which we're going to hit on, going through all seven rounds of your Patriots mock. We'll swap three fake trades each and then get to a mailbag. And it's partly because it starts with the obvious, which I just have to keep saying. I think it's Drake May. I think it will be Drake May. I think it has to be Drake May at the top. But how the Patriots fill in the spots after that number three pick now is kind of the real intrigue, to me at least. I know there are other people that disagree, but I don't think you're one of them.
Yeah, no, and I don't think there's that much left to say. And obviously, we have to fill the next month. But, like, yeah, they're probably almost – certainly going to take a quarterback number three overall. May made sense to me because at the owners meetings, Tom Pelissero put out there that the Cardinals could, or not the Cardinals, the Commanders could potentially take J.J. McCarthy number two overall. And then Brian Kelly let it slip during LSU's pro day. Wait, what did I say? And then Brian Kelly let it slip at LSU's pro day that Jaden Daniels might go to the Commanders at number two overall. So that kind of leaves the Patriots one way or the other with Drake May. Like, there's not a lot of buzz right now that Drake May could wind up going to the Commanders. So I don't know. He's a big body. He's got a big arm. I think that our buddy Austin Gale actually put out there recently on Twitter. He made an argument that the Patriots aren't going to be competitive in 2024 anyway. Trade down or do something else with the number three overall pick and then take your quarterback in 2025 when you are ready to be competitive. I love Austin, but I look at this completely differently. Like, yeah, the Patriots aren't going to be competitive until 2025. So take your quarterback and then sit him for a year and use next year to build around him. It's obviously two different ways of looking at it, but for me, you just have no idea where you're going to be picking next year, what quarterbacks are going to be available, what the quarterback prospects are going to be like. You know there's three or four guys in this class who are worthy of a top 10 pick, whatever it is. So just take him now, even if you have to sit him for a year.
I'm on the record saying I agree. I think that, like, there's also a part of this that people are underrating, where if you're a GM who's still on an audition, even if we think Elliott Wolff is going to keep his job and the Crafts are probably going to let him do exactly that, he has to ensure he's doing the thing that gives him the best chance to finish the job, which is keep it past, obviously, the draft. And if you don't take one of these quarterbacks and Drake May goes to Minnesota or J.J. McCarthy goes, you know, somewhere else and thrives immediately, and you're the Patriots stuck at 1-6 come late next October, looking at, you know, the Vikings soaring with the quarterback you could have had, even if the results would have been different. You don't have Justin Jefferson here. You don't have T.J. Hockenson, all those weapons. That's an owner looking at you going, why don't we have him? We had the third pick. There were three quarterbacks, maybe four at the top. And you just have to get inside the head of the GM, who, again, is very confident he's going to keep this job. But the tiebreaker goes to self-preservation, I think, for people in these jobs, and understandably so.
There's also the element there where the obvious trade down is obviously the Vikings at number 11 overall. Like, if you are trying to keep your job and not get laughed at and not have this terrible draft, you have no idea who's going to still be there at number 11 overall. Like, you might think that the guy that you want is going to be there, but what if he isn't? And then you're stuck at that number 11 spot with no one to take. Like, it's just so far to drop down. There's no guarantee that you can move back up from that point. So, yeah, we'll say it till we're right in the face, but it definitely makes the most sense for them to take a QB there at number three overall. And for me, whether it's Daniels or May, I think either one makes sense. I'd have to be a little bit more sold on J.J. McCarthy if he was the pick there, but who knows at this point.
All right, and thus ends the section of the podcast that I will be clipping and sending to Tommy Curran, our good friend and pal, who is firmly in Austin Gale's camp and came on this podcast ready to go in a way that I was unprepared for a week ago, but that's last week. Okay, so Drake May leads off your mock draft. Can you just take us through the next few picks and your thinking, and then obviously the trade that I hinted at? I think it was late third round for them to jump back and get a second receiver.
Yes. So number two in the second round at number 34 overall at Arizona's Jordan Morgan. I know there's some questions about arm length and all that stuff, whether he's going to be a guard, whether he's going to be a tackle. I mean, the guy started, I think, like 39 games at Arizona at left tackle. I know college isn't the pros, but there have been historical examples, even here in New England, of guys without the longest arms thriving at left tackle and doing well at left tackle. You need that guy there at left tackle for the future. You might be able to start Chukwuma Okorafor in year one.
You need a guy. I think you don't need, like, right. Ideally he's the guy, but you need a guy.
Yeah. And I mean, he's an older prospect, but like I said, he's got a ton of starting experience. So you would think there that he could probably step in from day one to be your starting left tackle. And he wouldn't be a guy like, you know, the guy from Yale or some of these other guys who are a little bit younger, less experienced, that you might have to sit for a year. And I think at left tackle, like you said, you need a guy there. They don't really have a guy there at all. So grab him as early as you can. This is the first time I've actually not taken a wide receiver in the second round. This is the first time that I've gone with a tackle there. And if he's there, I think it makes a lot of sense. Then I had them taking Devontae Walker, a wide receiver out of UNC, at number 68 overall. Good size, 6'2", 193 pounds, great speed, 4.36 40. And I might not take Walker if I'm not taking Drake May at number three overall. But I think that pairing makes a lot of sense because they showed good chemistry, good camaraderie, everything like that at UNC last season. So give Drake May a guy who he's already comfortable with, who could potentially play X wide receiver. That's what the Patriots need. You know, probably third most overall on this team right now behind quarterback and left tackle. But he's definitely a potential player who could do that. Good deep threat option. And then, as you alluded to, I traded back up from the fourth round. Patriots, I think, hold the number 102 overall pick in the fourth round. I trade up to number 99 overall in the third round to take Javon Baker, another wide receiver out of UCF. Not as good testing numbers, all that kind of stuff. I think he ran like a 4.5 4.40, but good speed, 6'1", 202 pounds. He's a guy who, if you match up his production with any other wide receiver in this class, like he matches up even with the guys in the top three or four. It's inconsistency, I think, that's knocking him down a little bit. Didn't always have the most consistent hands. I think that teams view him just a little bit inconsistently, but I was told that the third round was the range that he would be going in. So I don't think he might necessarily be there in the fourth round for you. So ensure that you get him, trade back up to the third round and grab another wide receiver. And then really Devontae Walker and Javon Baker can just battle it out in training camp to see who could be your X wide receiver in 2024, because there's not another option right now.
I like it a lot. I said it off the top. This was interesting to me, though, revisiting a lot of draft boards, you know, on a surface level. Like, I want to make my whole opinions once I watch all these players and then check in to see where other people are at. But on Danny Kelly, our friend, brought up Graham Barton on the last episode. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's a guy from Duke who's going to be a center, and everyone projects him late 20s. And I'm looking at his measurables. 6'5", 311, 32-inch and 7/8. 32 and 7/8 inches arms. And that's a knock on Jordan Morgan, that he's also too short in the arm department to play tackle. And yet those are his exact same measurables, 6'5", 311, try this for a third time, 32 and 7/8 inch arms. And so it's interesting that one guy is allowed to probably play a tackle, though some see Jordan Morgan as a guard. And Graham Barton's like, oh no, dude, you're playing center. And he has played center before. Whereas Jordan Morgan has been a left tackle since he stepped foot on campus and he had an ACL injury. But it's interesting to me because I'm with you. Like, I know when Nick Caserio spoke a couple of years ago at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, and it was virtual, but he was talking about arm length at a particular position the Patriots did a study on and said, you know what, like common sense, quote unquote, tells us that this is important for the position. It's really not. And I'm with right. you. I don't think that 1/8 inch or give it another half right. inch where you get in that ideal 33.5 inch arms is going to make that big of a difference. And if they believe in his athletic ability, which we know that the Packer way prioritizes for offensive linemen, Jordan yeah. Morgan fits the bill. And there are so many good receivers in this class. I don't mind, crazy as it sounds, waiting for the Patriots to take one at 68 in the third round, especially if you did, they go back into the third round for a second one.
Yeah, I really like the idea of double dipping a wide receiver, whether that is in the second and fourth round, second and third round, third and third round, whatever it is. It's someone there was a comment or a tweet reply to my mock draft saying like the Patriots already have 100 wide receivers. They might have a lot 100 wide receivers, but in this case, quality is a lot more important than quantity. And they just don't have a lot of quality at that position right now. Really, unless I'm not thinking of someone like Kendrick Bourne, Demario Douglas, and KJ Osborne are going to be on this team in 2024. Beyond that, like Tyquan Thornton, not necessarily a guarantee under a new no. offense. Kayshon Booty, all these Juju Smith-Schuster. I think like Patriots would love to trade him, but what draft pick would they have to attach to Juju Smith-Schuster to even be able to trade him at this point? So, yeah, I think that you need high-quality wide receivers. There's, like you mentioned, there's a ton in this draft. So take a couple of them and see if someone can start, because there's certainly a possibility that in this new offense, young wide receivers won't have the same type of trouble that they had in the Patriots' past offensive regimes.
It's as the old saying goes, when you have two quarterbacks, you really have none. When you have 100 receivers, it's mean you don't have a number one or probably yeah. a number two. And there you are with the New England Patriots. Not to mention there's a lot of positional overlap with the slots. Pop Douglas, Kendrick Bourne can play yeah. the slot. KJ Osborne really lives there. You want that big X like you're talking about, which really just doesn't exist. And Tyquan Thornton has shown nothing in the way of that he has a big leap coming. Again, right. he's added weight. Seems like he's had a good offseason. But I just need to see it on the field in a way that, aside from that one touchdown, I think against the Giants in the preseason game 2 summers ago, that we've really seen.
There are okay. a lot of good Z's and slots in this draft at wide receiver. And I don't know if I'm going to go, I don't know if I'm going to draft one this entire year, just because I can't bring myself to add another player like that to this team because they just already are stocked full of them.
And honestly, he's not guaranteed a roster spot, but if there was one player who's not named Kendrick Bourne in that group, it's going to be Pop Douglas. And that's right. the only place where he really lives, right? Like I'm yeah. not putting obstacles in the way of yeah. by far my most explosive player who's guaranteed right. to make the right. I guess KJ Osborne might be in there, but he had a 1-year deal. And like, it's more based on his reputation than what's the ceiling here with this guy. Like right. Pop Douglas very well may be a better receiver by the end of next season than KJ Osborne. Right. Let's see what that ceiling is, even though the dude obviously is 5'8" and 185, 190 pounds soaking wet.
Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 3 million members. It is the easiest and most exciting way to get on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players. You just pick more or less on 2 or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Prize Picks is so easy to play. I can make my Celtic picks and make my entry in less than 60 seconds. Quick withdrawals and easy gameplay and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what makes Prize Picks the number one fantasy sports app. Celtics and NBA fans, you can get in on Prize Picks in 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. On Prize Picks this week, I'm selecting Jason Tatum to dish out more than 5 assists and his teammate Jaylen Brown to have more than 22.5 points. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Prize Picks.
Okay. You mentioned the trade there specifically for a wide receiver. I gave you some homework. We have our 6 fake trades here that we're going to go back and forth on. I'm going to lead off with one that I mentioned on the last episode. You tell me whether you like it, hate it, or want to shoot it into the sun, because Danny Kelly leaned more towards option number 3, partly because I think it involved his favorite team, Seattle, but also because this is a big jump for the Patriots, in which I would describe as kind of a dream scenario for the left tackles. This is a deal moving them from number 34 overall in the second round up to number 16. Huge leap, granted, 18 spots, big deal, especially with the 5th-year option. Seattle has some very clear identifiable needs. Maybe they take Graham Barton or the guy that I have the Patriots going getting, Jory Fautanu out of Washington, left tackle, plug and play. He's the guy protecting Drake May, Jane Daniels for the next five, ideally 10 years. So here's what it would take.
Yep.
Elliot Wolf calling his old colleague, John Snyder, says, hey, I got number 34. I have a future third round pick. I have a fourth round pick. And according to the trade value charts, you're missing somewhere between a late fourth and an early fifth right now. But instead of giving you another pick that really doesn't get you going, I will give you a safety who would guarantee to be on your roster at least this year and probably next if you can sign him to a long-term deal, because right now you're staring at Rashawn Jenkins, and that's about it. Kyle Duggar, though, is a handsome man, and you can have Kyle Duggar plus these picks, the second, the future third, and a fourth, just to move back 18 spots. And if you really want, take one of the picks I gave you and stay back at the end of the first. What do you say?
I don't hate it. I love the idea of getting another potential blue chip player, because I was thinking about like, how do you move back up for like Brian Thomas or someone like that?
He's another option there at 16-2, definitely
in the middle of the first round. And yeah, it just seemed like so much, but throwing in Kyle Duggar, I think lessens the load. Like I still don't love the idea of giving up the future picks and like a fourth or whatever, but it's not too much. Like they can still build out the rest of their roster without those picks. And I just don't know what the future of Kyle Duggar in New England is going to be anyway. So I certainly don't want to fire it into the sun. It does seem like a lot to give up, but I do also think it's worth it to ensure that you're getting your future franchise left tackle. So I'd probably take that. Yeah, I don't hate that.
Oh, the damage here, right, is the future third. You don't want to be giving away future day one, certainly, you know, day two draft picks. If you're a team that's rebuilding, you want to stockpile picks, as Gerard Mayo said. The reason I made it a future third is because I just don't see this as a deal, though there might be one out there, as we will see later, to package my top three picks and make them into two and really gamble on those, unless you're so sold on the player. Right. Fautanu, though, strikes me as a guy that, again, plug and play athletically, the experience, positional need, everything aligns here. This is exactly where he's projected to go in the mid-teens. Make it happen. It's just I can't give another pick this year. So in this way, you could still get the quarterback, the left tackle, and stay around in the third round to take one of the receivers that you mentioned or others that we'll get to in the meantime. And I've already covered this again in the last episode, but I wanted to run by it. So that's my trade number one. What do you have?
I like it. My trade number one also involves Kyle Duggar. I think I probably had him valued maybe a little bit higher than you did, but you also had to maybe overvalue him just to make the trade work. I would say I was going to trade him for either a 2024 third or a 2025 second. In this trade.
I would take the second in a heartbeat. Yeah,
definitely. As far as the 2024 third, like if you rescind the franchise tag or the transition tag for Kyle Duggar and he signs elsewhere, I'm like 99% sure that he's then part of the compensatory pick formula and that you would get probably a 2025 third for him. So I think you want to do better than that. If he plays on the transition tag this year, then I don't think he is part of the comp formula next year. I don't know. I think that we might get into this a little bit later, but if you can get something valuable for Kyle Duggar this offseason, if someone wants him, if someone wants to give something up like that, there's a ton of safeties on the open market right now. You've got Justin Simmons, Eddie Jackson, Quandre Diggs, Micah Hyde, Julian Blackman, Tayshaun Gibson. There's just so many safeties out there right now that if you got a third for him, I don't know if I'd do it for a fourth, but like if you got a third for him, you could sign a guy like that or even potentially draft his replacement immediately, because you do need safeties on this roster, but it's pretty easy with the players that are out there to still fill that need, even if you do trade him away.
And I'm glad you brought him up because he's in another trade of mine. And it's not because Doug or I want Kyle Duggar off of the team. No. Let's be clear. The folks who are out there saying, why would you trade one of your 10 best players? Fair point. The issue is, as I said last night on TV, the longer this goes, the sour more. Is it sourer? Is that a word? Did I say more sour at the expense of a more efficient way of saying that?
I think more sour is probably better than sourer. I'm not sure if I've ever heard sourer.
I'm glad I said it. Felger made me repeat it, and I said more sour, which just made me feel like I had a sour taste in my mouth. Anyway, the longer this goes, where he's been hit with the transition tag and does not sign it, and as you and I reported from the get-go, he's not thrilled about this,
right?
The worse it gets here. The other part is, though, like you mentioned, the free agent market is flooded with veteran safeties, and there are not a whole lot of teams. no matter what list you go by or your own assessment of team needs across the league that need safeties. So Seattle was one of them. It's like Seattle, the Colts, maybe the Giants, and everyone else is, you know, is it a box safety? There's free safety. And Seattle has a lot of box safeties, but this is like, this is a dude. This is a guy you can get, plug and play, and make a difference in a system with Mike McDonald, their new head coach who came from the Ravens, that I think could make use of that player in a way that, you know, it's the Ravens, it's the Patriots, and maybe two or three other teams that you go, okay, they're going to get the most out of him. So, but it is tricky. Again, the Patriots, you know, need to find a team that needs Kyle Duggar. He is comes from their few surplus positions, right? It's him, Jabril Peppers, Marte Mapu, all play the same box safety position. Mm-hmm. And this is the most important part. They don't have many assets, right? Like, you don't like the idea of me giving away a future pick because you're rebuilding. It's also out of the treasure chest that's mostly empty of assets that they have right now. So you can't just be going giving away players. But if you're going to make a deal, you have to give up something. And Kyle Duggar is one of the few players in that treasure chest of assets that other teams go, okay, yeah, we'll take him. It's maybe like two or three players right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, like I think he's a valuable player. I think that he fits well with Jabril Peppers. I think that, you know, the defense obviously thrived with those two guys as the safeties last year. But yeah, he's an asset that you could possibly trade that you probably will not have on your roster in 2025. So if you can trade him when you're probably not going to be competitive in 2024 anyway, now is definitely the time to do it. Is it my trade now or your trade now?
My trade. So this is the non-Duggar category. This is simple. Yep. I alluded to this earlier. There's real risk in here. I talk about, I have three picks in the top 68, 70, 75, whatever your cutoff you want to be. I'd like to make, if I'm the Patriots, all three of those picks. But if I can feel like I've absolutely solidified two of the very obvious detrimental holes of my roster, quarterback, receiver, offensive tackle, and it means packaging two of those three picks to increase my odds of it filling at least two at the expense of obviously three, maybe you go and do it if you get into the first round. And here's how it happens. The Patriots call the Vikings, not the other way around. I don't know what's happened at 11, but in this scenario, they've held on to pick number 23.
Yep.
And the Vikings don't have a third round pick. They don't have a fourth round pick. And they sit right in front of Dallas at number 24, the Cowboys, who suddenly went from one of the offensive lines in football to, we're having tryouts on Tuesday to see if anyone wants to play for the Dallas Cowboys and block for Dak Prescott. So you call and you offer number 34, obviously, second round pick, and number 73. Which on the dot, according to the modern trade value chart, shout out friend Rich Hill, adds up to the 23rd overall pick. And so with a Vikings front office that is forward-looking as far as analytics goes, we'll be looking at these charts, wants to stockpile, add more picks, because they don't have any in the second and third, or the third and fourth round. And they value having more bites at the apple, darts on the board, whatever your cliche. I think this is a deal they might make, provided they get whomever they want at 11. Because they get their big pick in the first round, they move back, add some more, basically just a third round pick. And with the 23rd overall pick, the Patriots take Tyler Guyton. 6'8", long-armed, highly athletic tackle out of Oklahoma. He was nicked up some both at Oklahoma and previously at TCU. But he's right now expected to go 23rd or 24th based on the consensus expert big board. Shout out Marcus Mosher for putting this together on Twitter. And I think that's a guy who, again, you need to convert from right tackle to left tackle, but the trait scream, it can happen. And there aren't many guys like him left in the draft after this who have started against big time competition and have the traits to potentially make that transition from right over to left.
Yeah, I don't hate that, especially because the Patriots do have that early fourth round pick that they could either get back into the third, or one of those wide receivers could still be there for them. You know, with that fourth round pick at number, what is it, 103 overall right now? Yeah, I mean, like a Javon Baker or someone like that could still be there for them, who you might not be able to depend on him to start from day one, but he could at least compete for that role and maybe come in, you know, early, midway through the season, whatever it is, as a starter. So, yeah, I certainly don't hate that. You definitely need the left tackle. It's so hard to find those guys outside the first round. So, yeah, it could require moving back into the first round in order to do that. My next one probably gonna be a little bit controversial. I don't even know if there's a history of this happening, but Patriots have the 34th overall pick in the second round. Like, say someone fell out of the first round, teams are clamoring to get whatever it is. Like, would a team potentially give up a future first for that 34th overall pick, either just straight up, or you toss in a fourth or a fifth or whatever it would be, or a player, whatever it is, to get the future first round pick? Because, yeah, it's great to have that number 34 overall pick this year, but if, like we're all saying, the Patriots aren't probably going to be competitive this year anyway, I don't know, stockpile for the future. Like, I know that it's not sexy to do, but I think that there's a ton of value in having two first round picks in 2025, plus your second and your third and your fourth and everything else. So I don't know. It would be a sign that the Patriots weren't necessarily like tanking for 2024, but just an acknowledgement that, hey, we probably aren't going to be that competitive this year. This is going to be a much better pick for us next year. Let's trade out of it and get future assets to really, really, really build this team for the future.
Oh boy. What are our mentions like combined if that deal happens?
Oh God. Yeah, no, especially if there's like a potential franchise left tackle or wide receiver still there at number 34 overall. I do think that, I don't know, if the Patriots obviously are trying to win, like, you know, public support or whatever like that, that would be slightly less bad than trading down from the number 3 overall pick. But yeah, I don't think that Patriots fans would be thrilled about it, but there's some logic and some value to doing it if they were to do that.
I agree. And look, the Patriots picked on other teams, specifically Bill Belichick picked on other teams by seizing on and exploiting this idea that's been accepted. You know, a pick in a certain round today is worth a pick next year that's one higher. He goes, sure, I will gladly give you a third for a second tomorrow. Not a problem. And I got a lot of response to this when I, you know, missed it. Justin Fields was traded for a 2025 sixth round pick as opposed to 2024. I'm like, if you still care about that, and I understand why people do,
right?
You're just thinking in the way that the teams the Patriots picked on with all these pick swaps in years ahead were doing, and they, a year later, were going, oh, we probably shouldn't have done that. Anyway, I think that would be exceptional value. I think there are enough signs that they're quote unquote tanking already, see free agency. Right. And that would be a huge bummer. But if that happens, I would like to see them get back into the second round because, you know, 11 receivers could go in the top 50. Okay. Yeah. You're in 60. Anyone in the third round either has a clear red flag deficiency within their game or just might not be ready to start day one. The Patriots need more of those players. Like, you're going to play the kids. Make sure they're at least worthy of an argument for starting so they can win a tiebreaker over a veteran who goes, I'm better, but they have more potential or some kind of upside or something that just needs to be developed to round out their game. Yeah. That's my only hesitancy there, is that you don't have another player to just put on the field that inspires some sort of hope. And then you're waiting for that guy in 2025 to step in and ideally develop in 2026.
Yeah, I think and it's easy enough to get back into the second round with that third round pick. The fourth round pick, obviously, like I said, is pretty high there as well. So yeah, there's definitely a possibility to do that, but I don't know. Yeah. What's your next one?
Okay, so this is the one that I like the most and I think will have the most pushback. Those two are not connected, but I will tell you, this is my only trade back. And it also involves that second round pick, which is probably best described as pick 2.2, right? Second round, second pick in that round. So here's how it goes. Again, referencing the Rich Hill trade value chart, modernized version of Jimmy Johnson. If you're following the Jimmy Johnson chart, do like he does and just forget about it. Pick number 34 goes to the Indianapolis Colts for the second round pick, 46. So again, swapping seconds, you're moving back 12 spots. This is a difference of about 47 points per the aforementioned trade value chart. So those 47 points add up to somewhere within, you know, late third, early fourth. The Colts have a pick in the middle of the third round. If you're the Patriots, you would love to have that because then you go have pick 46, your own at 68, and then at 82. But in order to make that happen, what I have here is 34 and our friend Kyle Duggar going for 46 and 82. So you're moving back 12 spots and sending a safety there, but getting a third round pick, which I think personally is better value than you could get for Kyle Duggar in the open market, given what you're going to have to pay him, the available safeties who you can just sign, Justin Simmons included, who you're not going to have to give a draft pick for, and the fact that L'Jarius Sneed just went for a 2025 third round pick, a better player at a more premium position. He did sign for a lot from the Chiefs, but this tells me that a box safety is not going to go for the same price as a third round pick. It'll probably be a fourth. And that's where things offset. Like, just going back 12 spots is not worth entirely the third round pick that the Colts have, but that's where you make up the gap of going, okay, we should get an early fourth for this. You're giving us a mid third. We'll make up the difference with this player that we can replace in Jarrell Peppers. And in turn, instead of just having, and this is the best way to think about it, 34 and 68, we will have 46, 68, and 82, and then 102. Like that's where you can do some damage, adding multiple receivers, an offensive tackle, hell, even a corner if you want, right, where you still get a top 50 pick. You still have the top 50 pick, but get someone on the edge where it could be any number of these combinations. Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall, Xavier Leggett at wide receiver. If you go back into the 68 range, Tez Walker's here, who you're talking about. Jalen Polk from Washington, offensive tackles. All these are still on the board where you're picking. Houston's Patrick Paul, Notre Dame's Blake Fisher, the kid from Karan Amaji, Jalen McMillan, Javon Baker. Like all those guys are still there, and you get 68 and 82. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't mind it. I really do kind of like any trade involving Kyle Duggar, just like because like I said, I just doubt he's still on the team in 2025. So get something for him while you can right now during the draft, whether that is, you know, a pick this year or in the future. And I also like that because they've got, it would be five picks within the first 103. Is that correct?
Yes. I've got my head spinning in my own notes here, but more or less, so. Yeah, if you're including their 102, because they would normally just have 34, 68, and here you add 46 and 82. Yeah.
I think the value there is that you can still double up at wide receiver. You could still double up somewhere. But then also, if there's a player that you love on defense or some like position that we aren't really even considering the first three or four rounds, then you can also take that player as well. Or you can replace Kyle Duggar with a 21-year-old version of him, whatever it is. I like that. Yeah, no, I think that would be valuable trade right there. My last one.
Wait, can we just stop for 1 second? And I know I just did a ton of talking with numbers and names flying all over the place. Your first two responses were, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. Now we've come around to, I don't mind it. I kind of like it. That's a win for me. I was right. The third one was the best one. Again, apologies to Kyle Duggar, who honestly at this point might not mind being sent off to, I don't know, even NFL Siberia, which might be New England as it is. But it's just, we're not wishing him away. You're looking at available assets that make sense to unload at this point if you're the Patriots, given where things are in your depth and assets to get more picks. This accomplishes you're not losing a second round pick, you're adding a third round pick, and you lose a player, but that's the cost of doing business. If you're a rebuilding team, that's what you want to do.
My last one is taking that number 68 overall pick in the third round and then packaging that either with a fifth round pick or one of your sixth round picks to move back up into the second round. There's not necessarily a specific player that I have in mind for that trade, but I think that the value in moving up, whether it is like 6, 7, 8 spots or whatever it is, like there's only so many, you know, players that you're going to have a first or second round grade on, or even like a starting level grade on. And those players are probably going to start to dissipate quite a bit in the second round there. So be aggressive. You don't necessarily, like, yeah, you need as many young players, you need as many swings as possible in this draft, but I don't think you necessarily need a fifth and 2 6th round picks in this draft. I think that you can take one of those and make sure that you get the guy that you want in the bottom of the second round rather than the top of the third round. And if all it would take would be a fifth or sixth round pick, I think it's kind of a no-brainer, and we do expect a lot of wide receivers, maybe some offensive tackles, to still be around in that range, and you can't lose out on them hanging back and hoping that they're still there in the top of the third round.
Great point, and we've heard the names, right? I ran down some of them, Xavier Leggett. I even forgot about Trey Franklin, who will probably be in the high 30s, so he's outside of this conversation, the Oregon receiver. Talked about him with Danny Kelly and Danny Heifetz last week. There are so many receivers. Roman Wilson is in there. Like, it's worth making that jump up, specifically at traits, or a guy who doesn't have as many reps you think can really kind of develop here, might be a late bloomer, all those different things. That's what the second round is for. Rob Gronkowski is the greatest example of this. Traits, a little bit of a gamble, best football is ahead of him. Maybe it's a health thing. The payoff obviously is never going to match maybe the best tight end of all time, but that's the area where you move back in. The cost is less, it's less prohibitive than a first round pick, even though I've been arguing for that. And they've got the ammo to do that, where finding a first-round trade in, unless you're willing to sacrifice your third-round pick outright, it's more doable for a team that wants to add picks and still stay in the mix. And it's just hard to thread that needle when every single team is saying, I want more picks, and specifically those that are high up in the draft.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's review very quickly and then move on to the mailbag. Your three trades, because I want to hear what people like best and which ones, mostly mine, they want to shoot into the sun, whether this is in the YouTube comments or in both of our mentions, which are going to be on fire anyway if a number of these different things happen. But just to review, your three trades were what?
Kyle Duggar for a 2024 third or 2025 second. Trade the second round pick for a future first. However you do that, you probably need to throw in a little bit more. And then move back up into the bottom of the second with a fifth or sixth. And then that bonus one that was actually in my mock draft was trade back up into the third round to get a wide receiver like Javon Baker. All that would probably take is a fifth or sixth round pick in order to do that.
Okay. Working backwards for me, 34 overall and Kyle Duggar on a one-year deal, probably not here in 2025, for 46 and 82, a brand new third round pick essentially for Kyle Duggar, and you move back 12 spots in the second round. Or you swing big, go into the first round. Hello, Minnesota. We will take the 23rd overall pick. You can have number 34 and number 73. Then Seattle. Okay, you're taking a lot more than that. 16 for 34 and Kyle Duggar and a future third and a fourth round pick. It's a lot, but it all makes that happen. I think, at least as far as the numbers go, they might just hang up immediately. That's how sometimes these trades go. Yes. I do want to reiterate, though, because I just had a different number in there that I hadn't seen before, which means that I screwed something up here on this end. I said 34 and 73. That's 34 and 68, to Minnesota for 23 and second trade. So again, 34 and Kyle Duggar for picks number 46 and 82, basically an extra third round pick, courtesy of the Colts. Trade number two is you move up to 23 for your second round pick and your third round pick, which are at 34 and 68 overall, not 73. And then number 16, jump up 18 spots into the first round, get a left tackle. It's 34, Kyle Duggar, future third, and a fourth round pick. Okay. On to the mailbag. Carlos checking in. Quote, has there been any scuttlebutt regarding the Patriots being linked to any remaining free agents? He mentions Justin Simmons and Mekhi Becton. Additionally, are there any remaining free agents in particular that you would like them to target? Thank you.
At this point, like, there's not a lot of scuttlebutt with guys who are still available, because it seems like a lot of these guys might just sign after the draft or after the compensatory pick formula, all that kind of stuff. But I mentioned all the safeties earlier: Justin Simmons, Eddie Jackson, Quandre Diggs, Micah Hyde, Julian Blackmon, Tayshawn Gibson. But I'm probably just stealing everyone that you were going to name anyway. But like Stephon Gilmore, I think would make a lot of sense, especially after the draft. See what you can get in the draft. If he's still available and you still need another starting cornerback, grab someone like him. If you don't wind up with a wide receiver, maybe you consider someone like DJ Chark. If you don't wind up with a left tackle, maybe you consider someone like Donovan Smith. But for me, I would probably wait until after the draft at this point, see what you can get in the draft, and then kind of fill in those spots of need afterward, just to make sure that you can put an offense on the field right now.
So I have other names, and Stephon Gilmore is not on my list, actually. I don't think he makes sense for the defense they want to get to. 34, still more of a man-to-man corner. You know, as far as a mentorship, that would be great, but I think there's enough in that room, Jonathan Jones, that could help Christian Gonzalez in that kind of capacity, and especially for a team that's going to play the kids. Old man Steph is just not fit in that mold. But I understand why fans or anyone else, you would want to suggest that. I just don't think it fits their timeline right now. The names I had, you know, Justin Simmons, for sure. I think he fits, honestly, better what they need in the coming years than what Kyle Duggar can offer. Again, it's primarily a box safety. I think his ball hawking best days are behind him. Speaking to Justin Simmons, most interceptions in the league since 2016. Odell Beckham Jr. is not coming. Based on his prior comments about New England being very lukewarm to him since Tom Brady left, we all get it. But he's on the list. I think his play at this point, honestly, has been underrated with the Ravens, because I think people thought, you know, he obviously didn't live up to the contract, but he got better as the season went on. And is someone that you need a body at receiver. Emmanuel Ogbah is the last name that I had. And he was a good fit under Brian Flores in Miami, less so under Vic Fangio, the Dolphins defensive coordinator last year. You know, and Josh Boyer, you know, was the defensive coordinator in 2022, and I think still had good numbers there. He's only 30. He can play in the edge. He'll be part of a rotation, of course. He's familiar with the system, and I think still has some good football left. So he's out there, and he's the only other one. Plus, I mean, Mekhi Becton, you know, again, just a body to play a tackle. And J.K. Dobbins, I can't shake, which is strange, right? For a running back who's just been absolutely devastated, like disastrous injury after disastrous injury. But if he's someone that you just want to have in the building now in a limited capacity and role and really think, okay, just like an ACL is normally a year of recovery, a year of shaking off the rust, then that player reemerges basically 2 years later on this timeline, maybe there's something similar with him. And you can afford the timeline because he's still only 25. And again, granted, he's had multiple disastrous, severely damaging injuries, but that's a position where there's not a lot of pressure. If Ramondre Stevenson leaves next offseason and he's ready to take on more of a 1B role, he's already in the building.
Yeah, yeah, especially if you can get him on like a 2 or 3 year deal. I could certainly see some logic in that. One other guy that I'm just kind of surprised is still out there. I don't think he's necessarily a fit because of what we said with all the Z and slot wide receivers, but like Tyler Boyd's still out there is kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
Certainly would have expected him to sign a little bit earlier than this.
I agree. All right. Next question.
I can't listen to any more Odell Beckham Jr. rumors. I feel like he's been available like 27 times in the last 3 years.
Dan H., are there any recent-ish examples of quarterbacks drafted top 10-ish who truly redshirted their rookie season and still ended up as busts?
The answer is Jake Locker. He's like the only one. I went 8th overall, didn't start a single game during his rookie season. I mean, it was probably a bad pick by the Titans overall just because he was a not very efficient passing quarterback. Maybe the league wasn't ready for Jake Locker at that point, but it also seemed like his love for football also diminished while he was in the NFL. So that might've been more than just like, you know, an analysis or like a scouting issue more than it was just Jake Locker didn't want to play football anymore. But he's basically the only example right now of someone who did not start a game during his rookie season, went in the top 10 and was not a good quarterback and was out of the league within the first, you know, 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, this is a good question, obviously, because you and I are proponents of the take the quarterback, hashtag take Drake. Jaden Daniels, be fine, don't get us wrong, but with the idea being you're going to sit him. And it's not necessarily that sitting a quarterback is the formula. Not every quarterback who sits, a la Aaron Rodgers, a la Patrick Mahomes, a la Jordan Love, Rodgers and Love obviously sat more than just year one, is going to develop into an incredible quarterback. It's part of the environment, your pedigree, the situation around you, everything we've talked about. But it is interesting that Jake Locker also in that limited time, 51% completion percentage, 4 touchdowns, 0 picks in those 5 games that he played as rookie. You know, 2011 is a long time away. And I only went back to 2009, figured 15 years was long enough.
Yeah.
The part that's baked into this question, though, is that quarterbacks typically drafted in the top 10 are drafted to start right away. You're not taking a guy that you say, hey, we'll develop him in a year, like Jalen Hurts in the second round, or if we miss, it's only a mid-round pick. Like, no, this is a significant investment statement. There's not as much pressure. There's not as much patience with those guys. It's more pressure than patience. And so, you know, it would be an outlier situation, which makes, if the Patriots do take Drake May or Jaden Daniels, difficult to rely on history, where there's really a couple examples of this, and it was teams like Kansas City and Green Bay who traded up to get Love, traded up to get Mahomes, knowing that their infrastructure could withhold this kind of patience, which we'll see what happens if this just go into England, because I know a lot of fans are going to be chanting. They chanted for Bailey Zappi, okay, midseason, for the first round quarterback to play. Can the coaching staff, a new green coaching staff, hold up to that pressure? I don't know. We'll see. They need the quarterback first, though. All right, last one. Speaking of coaches, Kevin wants to know which Patriots coach outside of Gerard Mayo will have the biggest impact on the team in 2024.
I mean, this is probably the boring answer, but I would say Alex Van Pelt. I mean, he's installing a new offense. He's called plays before, but not a whole lot recently. So good or bad, he's going to have a major impact on this team. A sneaky one, I would say, might be Ben McAdoo, just because like he's the guy in the building who has head coaching experience. I don't exactly know what he's going to do. I think he probably will help out a lot with quarterbacks, maybe take some stuff off Alex Van Pelt's plate, maybe help out Gerard Mayo. But he's a guy who might not wind up getting a lot of credit this year. But if the Patriots have success or are, you know, good on offense, I'd be curious to hear what Ben McAdoo is doing behind the scenes.
Alex Van Pelt is the right answer. He's the boring one. But McAdoo is a good point in that, you know, it's going to be really hard to quantify what his impact is, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to be highly reliant on quotes, which are generally positive, these public statements about people you work with, same as if you got interviewed as you were leaving work one day about how it was sitting next to the guy in the cubicle who's farting constantly. You're probably not going to bring it up because you have to see him
too
tomorrow.
Too much time to undo.
Yeah, yeah. No, okay, thank you. It's you know, they're going to be public. So the point is, if Ben McAdoo does a great job or a poor job, we're not really going to be able to tell the difference, even if it is a good point by you. There is another coach, however, that if he's doing a poor job, we will definitely be able to tell, because the offensive line will look a lot like it did last year. And that is Scott Peters. And Scott Peters is an ex-offensive lineman. He is charismatic. I've spoken with him privately now on a couple different occasions. And he's a guy that's ready for this job. And it's tough to tell, right? I don't know how it was in Cleveland, where he was for 4 years as an assistant. But I know he learned under the best post-Scar era, Bill Callahan. And that's by advanced metrics. It's by people speaking publicly about their coach or their colleagues and just all the different techniques they used. It is different, though, leading a room and setting rules and building out a playbook with Alex Van Pelt than it is being an assistant. And so I'll be very curious how the young players take to that kind of coaching. Because the whole offensive operation is going to hinge on that line that doesn't have a lot of talent. So Scott Peters has to be his best, maybe before he's ready to be his best for this team because of just what that group looks like right now.
Yeah, I mean, this coaching staff in general is just – it really is going to be fascinating to watch because, like, if you go down the line, Alex Van Pelt doesn't have a ton of experience calling offensive plays. T.C. McCartney only has 1 year of being a quarterback's coach. Taylor Embry only has 2 or 3 years of being a running back's coach. Tyler Hughes has never been a position coach. Tyquan Underwood coming from college. Scott Peters has never been like the lead offensive line coach. Bob Bicknell is really the only one. Him and special teams assistant Tom Quinn, who have like extensive experience in the NFL. This is not necessarily like the youngest staff, but it is a pretty inexperienced staff. So relying, like, I do feel like there might be like one or two of these guys who maybe there's some turnover in year two or three because they just didn't work out. They're banking out a lot for the staff to come together and work really well.
Yes, it is. Bob Bicknell going to be coaching tight ends, had some sort of nebulous like offensive assistant role with the Saints last year, your typical coach who's been working 30 years and lived in 15 different places, which honestly, given the rest of the staff, as you laid it out, they could use some of that experience.
Yeah.
All right. Those have been our fake trades. That has been Doug's mock draft. That has been Doug Kide. One last announcement for the folks on YouTube who can see, I am wearing a Vitamin C VSB, Vitamin C Brewing sweatshirt. This was intentional and a partly to remind you that we will be having a second Pats and Pints night on April 18th. That is a Thursday from 7 to 10 at Vitamin C Brewing in Weymouth, Massachusetts. Come ask your Patriots questions. Doug and I will be there on a panel. There will be ex-players. And Doug, I have not told you this, I believe we have a soft commitment from Field Yates, who will also be in attendance. All the money is going to go to Boston Children's Hospital. It's going to be an night. We held one in the summer. There will be some items, I believe, that you can bet on. Anyway, come drink beer, talk draft with us, have drafts with us, talk Pats. We are there to answer your questions and hang out. It is at Vitamin C Brewing in Weymouth, Massachusetts, Thursday, April 18th, 7 to 10. Find my Twitter. Fitzy's doing a ton of work. We'll see him later this week. We'll make the same spiel to you and pitch. Please come. All the money going to a great cause. And thank you very much to our friends at Vitamin C. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Can't wait for that.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you, pal. Good luck on your next mock draft. I am going to write a column reminding everyone that it is silly season and all the stuff we talked about off the top. But hey, if it weren't for silly season, we couldn't do fake trades and look like totally reasonable people.
100%. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You got it.